of the day, the United States versus Knox. Mr. Schrank.
Good morning, and thank you. Prince Knox's case, setting aside the last count in the indictment, concerned events that happened in West Africa in the 1990s. The government sought to prove his guilt by calling witnesses, with the exception of one expert, who themselves had been in West Africa at the relevant times. Some of those witnesses were West African. At least one or two had come directly from West Africa for the trial. In these circumstances, it really was fundamentally unfair to prevent Knox and his court-appointed lawyer from talking to and eventually somehow presenting the testimony of West African witnesses who would have said he was innocent rather than guilty as the government's West African witnesses did.
Is there any specified parameters suggested by Mr. Knox's counsel?
I'm
parameters
sorry.
With regard to who they're going to talk to, what kind of travel was involved, all that sort of
thing. Yes, there was. He over the course of the 42 days between his first request and the beginning of the trial, he submitted seven different documents. He gave the names and the address or location of the four specific people he had in mind talking with and possibly deposing. He provided a spreadsheet on the costs of going over there after Judge Conlon asked him to do that. What he was seeking primarily, of course, was the time and the authorization for the expense in doing that. But this wasn't, as the trial judge suggested, this never was a roving criminal investigation across the western horn of Africa. He had four specific witnesses. He knew the roads on which they lived.
What was the content? What was the expected content of the testimony they would give?
That he had not taken up arms with the Revolutionary United Front, that he hadn't become a rebel, an insurgent, he hadn't fought. It was directly contrary to the things that the government and its witnesses alleged that he had done. The case was charged as lying. And the reality was that if Prince Knox really did take up arms and participate in atrocities with the Revolutionary United Front in West Africa, then he lied on his refugee application and made false statements later to the State Department. But if he didn't take up arms, if he wasn't a member of the Revolutionary United Front or the two other insurgent groups that provided its support, then he didn't lie when he denied doing those things. So his witnesses, the witnesses he sought to talk to and possibly depose, really went directly to whether he's innocent or guilty of at least the first three of the four counts of the indictment.
Was there an estimated cost with regard to estimated cost?
Yes, he provided a spreadsheet to Judge Conlon of, I think, airfare and what the interpreter and expert might cost. He did try to cost it out after she requested that. I think that was probably his second filing. It was at least early in an effort to meet one of her objections that it seemed pretty open-ended.
Remember what the cost was?
I don't. I'm sorry. I think I understand where Your Honor is going with that. Whatever the cost was, let's agree it's substantial. It's extraordinary. Were I sitting on this court, I would say, I don't want every CJA lawyer running to Cancun every time he happens to represent a Mexican. I'd have a concern about this. But this really was an unusual case. We were factually, I didn't try the case, but factually, the parties were retrying, replaying a civil war in West Africa in the 1990s. So the events charged in the indictment really did happen in West Africa. This wasn't somebody from Sierra Leone who happened to get caught at O'Hare smuggling in heroin or something. The events happened here. The events that mattered happened in West Africa, and the percipient witnesses had to have been in West Africa at the time. Some of the governments still were. Others had come here, presumably as refugees or a couple on special parole. So this really is an unusual case in that sense.
Well, it's not unheard of. I know from personal experience when I was a district judge, I authorized lawyers to go to Jamaica. Because I'm not sure I always had the second thoughts about that. It wasn't a bad location to go to.
Well, and I'm going to hazard a guess that Monrovia will never be mistaken for Jamaica.
No, I agree.
Mr. Chang, apart from the cost involved, was there any representation made other than these potential four witnesses would just say he wasn't a member? I mean, was there at least a suggestion of why they would not? In other words, to just get four affidavits, he wasn't. I mean, was there anything fact-specific that over a time frame that the government charges he was doing X or Y? I mean, otherwise, it is a little open-ended,
right?
Cost aside, if it's just going to be four individuals allegedly who could say, no, he's not a member of whatever.
Right. They were related, as I understand, by blood or marriage. So they would have...
Well, yeah, I understand. I don't want to discount... I appreciate that. I wasn't discounting that they had some favor, bias because of family. I just wonder, would they say something other than he wasn't a member? I mean, how would they support that conclusion and whether that was offered up as any...
Because we saw him. You know, we were around him. He was family. Therefore, I guess he wasn't out burning villages or running with a rebel army. And it was tough because, you know, the government never narrowed down exactly the time frame when he supposedly was doing these things. We're really dealing with the early 90s to the mid to late 90s. So I don't know how Mr. Meyer could have been more specific. He didn't even have affidavits from the witnesses why he couldn't contact them and explained, you know, the infrastructure problems there. They don't have telephones, email accounts. That's not going to happen. So I think he proffered what he could, and to be sure, one of the reasons the district court gave in denying the request, or as she successively did, was, well, this is pretty vague, and you haven't convinced me that these necessarily are occurrence witnesses. But again, where we're talking about a period of years, you're going to have no one who every single day is with him. But if he's here with us in Sierra Leone, and he's farming, or he's sculpting, or he's doing whatever he's doing, in the main, then he's not over fighting a war in Liberia to the east. And that's at least probative evidence of what he's doing and the truth of his statements to the State Department and, in the end, to ICE.
But wasn't the proposal really to go over to these areas, and not really specific locations, but just areas, and talk to people,
no,
I guess these four, and then if it was productive, then to do a deposition.
Well, yes and no.
So the government, to participate, would have had to sort of float around and wait to see if a deposition popped up, and whether these were really the people he was identifying to the court and so on.
There are
governmental problems, too, regarding letters rogatory and the restrictions on taking testimony.
Let me try to take these one at a time.
That's not a very good question.
He had four specific people and at least a road, you know, an address in that sense. So he wasn't just going to wander around in the wilds looking for people. He had four specific people in mind. And you are correct, this was a two-step, and rightly so, a two-step proposal. First, let me investigate. Let me talk to the four specific people my client has put me on to. If they've got something helpful to say, and I assess them as Knox's lawyers being credible witnesses, then I would like to depose them. Now, again, the primary issue is time. and the money to get going on this. The details, I suppose, about whether you make one trip to investigate, come back and make a second trip to undertake depositions by going through, there don't appear to be bilateral, multilateral treaties with Liberia or Sierra Leone, but one would contact the consular section of our embassies there and take those steps. Whether it's more cost-efficient and efficient as a matter of time to do that in one trip and invite the government over at an appropriate time or to do it in two trips, I don't know. And there was no way Mr. Meyer could have known that.
Mr. Knox was detained.
He was.
And eager to go to trial?
No, eager to have this done.
He wanted the trial delayed to do this.
Absolutely. And really, that's what the defense was asking for from Mr. Meyer gets appointed on February 8, and by February 19, he's asking for time and for money to pursue these four witnesses and possibly to take depositions. I think it bears noting that he's trying to be cost-effective. He's accepting a lesser alternative than bringing four witnesses from West Africa so that they might testify live. He's proposing Rule 15 depositions on the thought that that's fairer to Uncle Sam and at least allows Mr. Knox to present
some evidence. Was he retained counsel? Retained counsel?
No, he was appointed. Mr. Knox was indigent from the start. Mr. Meyer was appointed about 14 days after arraignment because the first appointed lawyer had to get out for irrelevant reasons. This trial started 67 days on the calendar after this arraignment. Judge Conlon just was not going to provide the time, let alone the money, to undertake this. So to finish your question, Judge Tinder, the matter of letters of rogatory or how you would go about taking sworn testimony in those countries is a perfectly legitimate issue. You get to it once you've got the time and the money to undertake this. It's not that the defense counsel ever refused to do what was necessary procedurally or thumbed his nose. He was asking for time and money to get there, to undertake the process at all. He contacted the embassies, made some initial inquiries. So this wasn't thumbing his nose at the necessary procedure, but you've got to have the time and the money first to do that. I'm into rebuttal time. I'm happy to use that if this is productive. Otherwise, I'll save.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Weiss.
May it please the Court. As a preliminary matter, I would like to point out that the defense is correct on page 15 of his brief that the government misquoted the stipulation at trial. The stipulation is as it reads on Government Exhibit 2, which the government submitted to supplement the record on appeal, and I apologize for that mistake. I was quoting, I think I must have quoted the draft stipulation in an effort, ironically, to get the language correct.
And while you're at it, your reference in your brief to the testimony before the magistrate judge as being part of the evidence that supported the conviction, the jury never heard that.
That's correct, Judge. But even without that argument, I think that the evidence was sufficient. To address the arguments that the defense counsel just made, the district court did not abuse its discretion in denying the defendant's request for government funds to travel overseas to locate witnesses, to see what they had to say, and then to decide what the proper method would be to depose them so that their testimony would be admissible in a U.S. court.
I guess it wouldn't be in retained counsel. For the retained counsel, he wouldn't have been asking for the money, would he?
That's correct, Judge. He wouldn't have been asking for the money, but he would have had to go through the diplomatic means, through letters rogatory, coordinating with the Department of State and foreign officials if necessary.
But he didn't get that far down the road, did he? I mean, Judge Conlon was pretty skeptical of the whole idea.
That's correct, Judge. And the reason he did not get that far down the road is because he never made that preliminary showing that these witnesses would have anything material to say.
Now, the witnesses that did testify and said they saw him in uniforms and or markings of this particular group, Were they live here, or was that by, how were they presented?
They all appeared in court, Your Honor.
Were they brought over from Africa?
Yes, Your Honor. Some of them were already here, and some of them were brought in for purposes of trial.
So the government had witnesses who brought over from Africa, but the defendant was precluded from...
Well, Your Honor, the government went through all the diplomatic channels and closely coordinated with the Department of State. All the defendant had to do here was to make a preliminary to get the ball further, all he had to do was make a preliminary showing that these witnesses had anything material to say. He never made even a proffer or a guess as to what these witnesses would have said. Presumably, he had some guess at what the witnesses would have said because he had the names in the first place.
Did Judge Conlon request that he provide a proffer?
Yes, Judge. And in the court's rulings, which I quoted in my brief, she specifically says in her second, or actually this is the March 28th ruling, which I believe was after his motion to reconsider, she says, "You haven't given me in camera or out of camera any showing, any factual showing whatsoever that these witnesses have material information." The government was not party to this or privy to this ex parte in camera submission, but I know that at least in the filings and the things that were in public, he did not make any specifics at all. What the defense wanted to do here was to have the government pay for him and an interpreter to go on their own to West Africa to interview these witnesses, and then if the witnesses had exonerating information or material information, then he would somehow invoke foreign law and take the depositions so that they would be admissible in a U.S. court. This is illegal. First off, he needed permission of the Department of State and coordination with the foreign countries. It's completely unworkable, and it's improper because he didn't make a preliminary showing, as I said, that it would generate any material evidence. He didn't make a showing that it would substantively generate any material evidence or that procedurally it would have been admitted at trial. He gave the district court no other option, and the appellant's position that the main issue was time here, that was not the case in the district court at all. In all of the filings that the defense made in this case, it was only the last two filings at the very end where he requested, his words were, continuance and continue the trial date to allow the proposed defense investigation to proceed. In the government's position, this entire issue was just a transparent effort to create an issue for appeal.
And I don't recall, witnesses you have that testified about his participation based on their direct
on their personal interaction with him. We had five or six, yes, Your Honor. And all of them were very specific as to times, dates, what they saw.
I'm reading that.
Okay.
Now, did any of those witnesses make themselves available to defense counsel in this case?
They were available in the sense that any government witness is available to the defense, as you know, as we told any.
I mean, did this record reflect where they were willing to talk to the defense counsel?
There's
nothing.
Whether
defense counsel made any representation to Judge Conlon in that regard. I'm just trying to get a sense of whether Mr. Meyer had something by way of an indication that perhaps those witnesses could be challenged by some other witnesses. So I understand the normal procedure. I just wondered in this case whether or not he made any special effort or whether there was a refusal by witnesses perhaps to discuss it with Mr. Meyer.
There was no refusal by the witnesses as far as I know, and there certainly was nothing on the record about witnesses refusing to speak with him. Another clarification I'd like to make is that some of the facts that appellant brought out in his argument were not at all elicited in a district court. Even the facts that some of these family members would say that they saw him at certain times and therefore he couldn't have been a fighter, those things were not at all presented to the district court.
Well,
proper method here would have been to make the sufficient preliminary showing that they had material testimony, that it would be that testimony would be admissible under the federal rules of evidence in a court of law in the United States, and then to go through diplomatic channels. And the defendant did not do any of those things here.
Unlike my scenario about Jamaica, this would not be a place you'd want to go voluntarily.
Yes, Judge, and actually that is another point that Judge Conlon made in one of her several opinions on this, is that another concern would be the security concerns, which would be why you would want to coordinate with a foreign country and Department of State. If there are no further questions, I'll rest on my brief.
Thank you, Ms. Weiss. Ms. Frank?
What troubles me in the end about this is that if the government, after 2.5 years of consideration following Mr. Knox's entry to the United States, makes the considered judgment that it wants to try factually what he was doing in West Africa in the 1990s and bring in 6 people from West Africa, one of them by special permission of the UN Security Council, to do that, then it really ill behooves the government to say it's just too much trouble to let him defend himself, or to let him call the witnesses who would say, no, I didn't see him in RUF T-shirts or running around with guns, and I knew this guy. I lived with him.
That's kind of like his wife's testimony, wasn't it?
Yes, and it was weak.
And even in that, there were
She was so weak. That's all. She didn't meet him until 1996. He was gone for 7 months during that marriage. And the government was allowed over objection to suggest that she was scared to death of him. She was weak. And to say that the defense lawyer should have done more than he did in docket item 30 and more than he did in docket item 41, the in-camera submission, in describing and proffering what he hoped to get from these people, was to put on him an impossible burden of saying, you can't talk to these people until you talk to them.
Well, Mr. Strang, wouldn't Mr. Knox have outlined to Mr. Meyer the kind of inquiry to be made of these individuals who would block out, you know, specific times or absence from a territory? And could there have been at least that offer? Do you understand?
I
know you do, but
the court can decide whether docket 41 and docket 30 met it, but he's in the position, Knox is, and Meyer, of having to try to prove a negative. You know, in fragmentary moments, the government witnesses say, I saw him here with a gun. I saw him here complaining about sauce for the rice. He's in a position of trying to say, during the entire 1990s, here's some people who say, gosh, I was around most of the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Strang. Thanks to all counsel.